While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On The Reader right here on Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and today is Thursday, the 2nd of April, 2026. Now, as the nation moves further into a new month, the pace of change across Namibia continues to accelerate, from shifts in our economic landscape to fresh ideas shaping innovation, governance, and opportunity. Now, this is where we bring it all into focus. On the Reading News Analysis, it's not just about telling you what's happening. It is about helping you understand why it matters. Every headline has a deeper story. Every policy decision carries real consequences, and every emerging trend signals where Namibia may be headed to next. Now, this afternoon, we take a close look at the forces shaping our country right now, unpacking key developments in business, exploring policy direction, and examining how innovation and digital transformation are redefining opportunity, especially for the young Namibians. We'll connect the dots between decisions made in boardrooms and parliament and the realities experienced in homes, classrooms, workplaces across the country, because understanding the bigger picture isn't a luxury, it is essential. Now, for the next 1 hour and 30 minutes, expect thoughtful analysis, informed perspectives, and conversations that go beyond the surface. Whether you're an entrepreneur, a student, a policymaker, or simply someone invested in Namibia's future, this is your space to stay informed, engaged, and ahead of the curve. So wherever you're listening from, Windhoek, Walvis Bay, Oshakati, Kathmandu, or beyond, we're glad to have you with us. This right here is On The Reader News Analysis, not just reporting the news, but making sense of it all. Now today, we turn our focus onto health matters. We turn our focus on something that we need to be aware of, especially this time around. That is epilepsy awareness, understanding, managing, and supporting. Now, the world recently marked Brain Awareness Week, a global initiative dedicated to increasing understanding of brain health and neurological conditions. Now, under this umbrella, it is important to spotlight epilepsy, a condition that is still widely misunderstood in many communities, wrongly associated with curses of witchcraft. Now, we want to address those issues this very afternoon right here on the Reading News Analysis and break down the myth. Now, joining me in studio right now is Ms. Harminia Rifajan. Did I get that right?
It's fine.
Okay. She's the chairperson of Epilepsy Namibia. And also, we are joined in studio by Dr. Anita Sala Chirongo, and she's a neurosurgeon from the Benguela Neuroscience Institute. I wonder how many years ago that is, Dr. Anita. Welcome on the show.
Thank you very much for the introduction, and thank you for having us here.
Yeah, my pleasure, definitely. Now, of course, Namibia is still celebrating commemorating Brain Awareness Week or Brain Awareness Month. And of course, this time around, we're shifting our focus to epilepsy. Let's start off with Dr. Anita. Tell us the relationship or the link between brain awareness and epilepsy neuroscience. Where does that merge?
Okay, thank you for that. My name is Aminata, just to be clear.
That's okay.
All right. Brain Awareness Week is to put a spotlight on, you know, brain science, brain health, and bring in the populations and the countries to understand what's going on with brain science and be involved and aware and to promote awareness, etc. What is the connection with all of these? I want to pan out and just say something about brain health first.
Yeah, okay.
So what is brain health? Brain health is not brain health. Actually, brain health is everything health, because our brain interacts with everything around us. It has an effect on everything. It affects us. It is affected by everything. And so brain health is everything health, and every aspect of our brain is like a flower in a bouquet that works together to just make beautiful art. And each person, each brain is original, you know, and unique.
Yeah.
And so as far as brain health, we want to share 7 pillars on brain health, which were developed by Stanford University in California. And the first one is movement and exercise, your physical activity. Second one being healthy nutrition. It's important to eat well because, you know, in terms of your brain development, your brain maintenance, just for you to interact with anybody, your brain needs to be healthy.
Yeah.
And nutrition is the first medicine for that. Restorative sleep. Sleep is incredibly important. It has so many benefits, which you can go into later. Stress management is an important part of brain health, although there are different types of stress, good stress, tolerable stress, and toxic stress. But stress management is important. Social engagement is important in brain health for us to interact with other people, with our environment. Cognitive enhancement, challenging your brain, learning things, education. That's extremely important for brain health. Gratitude and reflection, having reflective time, taking a walk, going out, you know, into nature.
Yeah.
That's a time for reflection. You can reflect right where you are, but sometimes being in green spaces can promote that, right? And gratitude, reflecting on your own self and your experiences and looking for positive reminders of what you're doing. All these things are good for your brain health.
Yeah.
And so having said that, neuroscience being the study about the brain in all areas. So there's neurophysiology, there's neuroanatomy, you know, there's a microscopic aspect, there's the electric aspect, there's all sorts of aspects of neuroscience. And so Benguela Neuroscience, that's an entity I created to study and follow the my interests within brain health and everything going on in the brain. So to that end, Brain Awareness Week being the celebration of and commemoration of that, we decided to look specifically at epilepsy because we think socially there's so many effects that are ignored and that need to be highlighted. And within the population, sometimes there's a lot of misunderstanding. And the worst part is there's a lot of treatment available which people are not aware of and don't take advantage of. So we thought heightening awareness, bringing information, and introducing people to where things are and how they can get what they need and what things are could be helpful.
Exactly. And that brings us to you, Ms. Harmina. I need you to pronounce the name fully, properly.
My full name is Harmina Rebagen.
Okay.
But we use Mina.
Okay. Mina.
Mina.
Good. It makes it easier for some of us.
Absolutely.
Now, of course, you get into us in explaining what is epilepsy. Since you deal with an organization, Epilepsy Namibia, that's an organization of, and I love that, of and for the people with epilepsy. So get into explaining what epilepsy is, because there's so much of the myths of what it is not.
Okay. Epilepsy is wide, and it is, it has a high impact on persons with epilepsy.
Okay.
But we follow the medical side. They are the crown in our, the jewels in our crown for the treatment. We don't deal with medical side of epilepsy. Just the side to make it workable to live with epilepsy. So we do advocacy, we do awareness, we do lifestyle management training, and we do sort of a living with epilepsy program. Because once you've been diagnosed and are going through the medical side, you have to make some adjustments to live your life. And we say we want to empower people with epilepsy to take their place in their community. And that is where the rub with epilepsy in the community comes in. And that is why we say we work on a holistic program where all the facts that Doctor just mentioned are very, very important and actually the basis of what we do and try and get for people with epilepsy. Is the services where they are, preferably in their own language, and then also in their own culture. Because we believe you can only be sick and pray in your own language. And that's very important for us to see that the scaffolding around a person with epilepsy in the community is put up And it's put up by people known and people in their environment and people with the understanding for mm-hmm. epilepsy. Mm-hmm. On the neurological side, what epilepsy is, I think it's better to leave that explanation there. Because in actual fact, every epilepsy, and that's the point I want to pick up from you, is that it is unique. And it is, there's lots of kinds of epilepsy, there's kinds of seizures, there's kinds of everything, but every person's epilepsy is unique. Mm-hmm. It needs a certain approach in treatment and in lifestyle management.
Mm-hmm. That is properly tailored for that specific person.
Yes. The tailoring is not so different or difficult,
okay.
but we try to make it manageable for everybody living with epilepsy.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Doctor, please get into us on epilepsy mm-hmm. From a medical perspective now. Mm-hmm. Some claim it to be a mental illness. Some say it's contagious. And other people also think that it's a spiritual condition. Mm-hmm. So, but then let's get it right from the horse's mouth on what actually it is.
Okay. So epilepsy is an organic and functional brain condition. The brain communicates through electricity. There's a lot of electrical activity going on as far as the nervous system. And when there's a disturbance of that, you can get epilepsy, which is why it is so unique. Depending on where there is an affectation, you can get a different manifestation of epilepsy. You can have generalized manifestations. You can have focal manifestations. You can have what are called gelastic manifestations, where people okay. just sit and just laugh all the time. You see someone laughing, you think they're just laughing. No, they're having a seizure.
Oh, yeah.
You can have people okay. who have absence situations where they're with you, but suddenly they're not there.
Mm.
They're staring, they're looking, they're shuffling papers around. They're actually having a fit.
Mm-hmm.
And society doesn't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
You may think a child is just being rude, you know, when it's an actual organic thing that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Half of taking care of a problem is diagnosing it.
Mm.
And we need to help our local populations to understand these manifestations so that people are not victimized or stereotyped
mm-hmm.
when really they have a medical condition
mm-hmm.
that needs diagnosis and help.
Mm-hmm.
And they can potentially be cured in most cases.
Mm.
So it's very important that we make the efforts we are making so that if the population out there can hear it, we know that those who have not been diagnosed can get diagnosed. Those who are diagnosed can get treatment. And if treatment is inadequate, mm-hmm. they can get other treatments. And if even those medical treatments are not working, which is where I come in, there's neurosurgical treatments now.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's neuromodulation, there's brain stimulation, there's all sorts of things. There's mm-hmm. lesions that can be removed from the brain because you can actually, inside your brain, you can have a scar.
Hmm.
So when we talk yeah. about contagious epilepsy, okay, epilepsy is not contagious from a person to a person, but
yeah.
there are infectious diseases that can be underlying epilepsy.
Yes, I see.
So you can have, for instance, different types of cerebral malarias. You can have people who have ingested meat that is not properly cooked,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can get some of these, to put it more lay terms, worm eggs inside the brain, which are in a particular area, which can then cause epilepsy, which can cause seizures
yeah.
for that person.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody runs away and think, you know, person's possessed by a spirit, when really it was just a biological effect of something that, you know,
mm-hmm.
you can follow through and you can test for
mm-hmm.
and then treat.
Okay, interesting. Let's get back to you, Ms. Mina. In terms of managing somebody who's having an active episode or fit, what is the first thing that perhaps we should do, and also walk us practically in steps that we should do? Because so many times you might see somebody, perhaps a colleague, and you have not managed someone who was actively having an episode of epilepsy at that particular point in time.
This sounds a bit wrong. In the first instance, do as little as possible.
Oh.
Not to move the person, not to restrict the person,
okay.
not to put anything in the mouth. Wait for the seizure to stop, because most seizures stop by themselves.
Okay.
The important things you can do, just for protection, if the person is in a dangerous place, near water, near fire,
mm-hmm.
in the road, we recommend you throw a blanket or a jacket underneath.
Mm-hmm.
roll person, pull. Don't touch the person.
Okay.
And nothing in the mouth, because this belief of that you can swallow your tongue or stuff.
Mm.
I actually dare the listeners to swallow their tongues. It's a fun game, but you can't win.
You can't. It's true.
So there's no reason for you to be in the mouth of a person with epilepsy. You will break their teeth or their jaw bones or something like that. They might bite their tongues. You might see a little bit of blood. It's sore. It's very sore.
Mm-hmm.
But it heals very quickly. So that's not a sign of any danger. But mm-hmm. if the head is in danger, we support the head. I always wear a scarf with me.
Okay.
As a sling.
Uh-huh.
So you can go under the head and just hold, but don't pull tight, so that the head can move.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can put your foot under.
Mm.
Just not so it's banging on the floor or wherever.
Yeah.
Just a protection. If there's anything tight, glasses, ties, scarves, jewelry, that you think might restrict, you can remove it. But you have to be fast, because by that time the seizure might be over already.
Yeah.
It is appreciated for aftercare that you time the seizure.
Oh.
So if you have a seizure longer than 3 minutes continuous, you better get medical help very soon.
Mm-hmm.
But what people miss is the seizures sometimes stop and go again, stop and go again. Cluster seizures, you don't really have to call medical help. It will stop. And when the body is going silent or quiet mm-hmm. or not moving,
mm-hmm.
You can turn to the left-hand side just in the recovery position and wait.
Mm-hmm.
It is also appreciated if, when the person is coming to, that you ask specific questions. They will not really know where they are
okay.
or what happened, because they're not conscious of this. And that is with the bigger seizures, the generalized seizures. The seizures where people walk around, which is a focal seizure, we just hold them from the back, like you do when you dance the kango,
mm-hmm.
when you dance in a row.
Okay.
And just steer lightly away from any danger or any furniture, any traffic, any whatever. Those seizures are actually shorter than the other ones.
Okay.
Also report what happened. What happened while in seizure, and what happened before and after, if you can. Because that is a good record for the medical teams to follow up and to know what to do about that.
Mm-hmm.
But we do recommend always that a person with epilepsy has a caregiver with them, or a friend or a relative
mm-hmm.
who knows what is going on and how to treat the seizures. Because they are a bit different from person to person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that is one of the things that is actually the best protection,
okay.
is to have people around you that know what to do. And our ever, ever emphasis is talk. Tell people that you get seizures.
Okay.
Tell them what you want done when the seizure happens. Because the more you keep silent, the more confusing.
Mm.
And I understand. I work with people with epilepsy for two reasons.
Okay.
Is that you never know. You are completely unsure when you will have a seizure.
Mm.
To live with that uncertainty is terrible. The other thing is you can never be alone. Because you need somebody with you for in case you have a seizure.
Yeah.
Day and night, 24/7. And that to me is a high price for yourself.
Okay.
So, but we really recommend that you talk. We also have cards that can be carried with you to say that you have epilepsy, what you want to done, who needs to be called, what hospital to go to if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But you hardly can ever reach those things within a seizure.
Okay.
You have to wait till afterwards.
That's true.
Because it's normally in a pocket or a bag or whatever. So it doesn't really help
at that moment.
Most important thing is that people know that you have epilepsy and what to do when you have a seizure.
Mm-hmm.
Who to call, to restrict or not restrict, or I mean, there are different things. And there's also a thing that people want to give fluids. Very few people can take fluids during a seizure or directly afterwards. It takes a little time.
Okay.
So that kind of thing needs to be known to the people around you.
Yeah.
Sounds like we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Yes.
As a community.
Mm, absolutely. But I really take that, took note of that point where you say they should speak up, especially so that when it does happen, because they will, it will catch them off guard. Let's say, for instance, I have a colleague here and then she speaks up and she says, the information is in my handbag. Then immediately at that moment, I can also reach into her handbag, look at the card and say, okay, she says, I shouldn't do this, don't do that, and don't do that. Mm. But also, I take note of do very minimal.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. But you know what? Let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back to continue.
It's been 30 minutes.
What?
Yeah, I told you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere uliko ni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwa onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda juka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa minuto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabu ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatimwe bali heari nola natu heari bali no heari Ile ko berewa hora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM the
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no! Why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the mimo with the big back too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life you just get squeezed. But luckily with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Your bank would never ask for your login details. Never share your login credentials, password or PIN. Call 0612991200 to report fraud. Bank Windhoek, a member of Capricorn Group.
Fraud. Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and we are now back. We're discussing epilepsy under brain awareness. That was celebrated. The world came and celebrated world awareness because we need to make the people aware of the conditions that we are dealing with. Now, of course, doctor, let's talk about, Dr. Sarah Chirongo. Let's talk about, treatment of someone with epilepsy. You also mentioned something quite interesting, which is that a person can be treated or be kept, can actually, they can come a point where they no longer have seizures, right? Mm. With treatment and management. So I've also learned that, epilepsy is sometimes managed with diazepam, I think lorazepam or something like that. Tell us those, the drugs also and how they perhaps work in helping a seizure to end or perhaps to no longer for one not to continuously have those seizures.
Mm-hmm. So, when Mina spoke, she mentioned the uniqueness of every person and the fits they have. What that leads into is what is called precision medicine, where every individual is treated based on what they have. Everybody's different.
Okay.
So one medication that may work for one person may not work for another person.
Yeah.
And what epilepsy medications will do is they chemically will lower the threshold of what causes seizures, this electric activity. They lower that threshold. So there are people who, despite having taken that drug, their threshold is still high enough that they still get seizures. Then they then go and get another medication.
Okay.
So medications such as carbamazepine are there. There's medications like sodium valproate. Mm. Of course, there are many now trade names of same drugs and the combinations, which can be confusing.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it's, you know, those types of generic medications, which are then given other names.
Yeah.
Once a patient becomes, you know, resistant to all of these epilepsy drugs, then the third level is then, okay, you are now, you know, you have what are called intractable seizures. Mm-hmm. is the actual term that is used. Basically means you're not getting help with the medication.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get intractable seizures, you mustn't throw up your hands and say, okay, that's it. You know, she's just going to have seizures for the rest of her life and we're just going to have to manage.
Mm-hmm.
Still go back to your health practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
The population must not tire of going to their health practitioner. So if I have a patient who I'm dealing with, or even a family member, you know how doctors in the family, we are abused by our family members.
Yeah, obviously.
You know, I have this pain. I've gone to see the practitioner. They haven't, they gave me something. It hasn't helped. Okay.
Yeah.
You have to go back to that person and say, it hasn't helped.
Okay.
They have tools in their bag that they can give you. And then that person will say, okay, take this other one on top of what you're taking, or take this instead, or let's do this test and see what's wrong. Don't tire of going. It's your health.
Okay, I see.
And your health is your wealth, right? So same thing with seizures and epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
You take a medication. First get it diagnosed. If you see someone having a seizure, let me backtrack, as I wanted to add this when Mina was speaking last.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that medical practitioners like is that if there's a family member or a friend who's close by, take a video.
Okay.
Or keep a diary.
Because it's not, a video is specifically for us because it's difficult to explain what you're seeing in the heat of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you're busy concerned about the person's safety and the surprise. So when you take a video, not a video to sensationalize and share, a video for health purposes that you're going to keep private, that you show the health practitioner, they can see what type of seizure exactly this person is having.
Mm-hmm.
And it will give an indication, because things that manifest on your body are a reflection of what's in your brain. So we can sometimes say, okay, this is originating from this part of the brain already.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so saying that to say that when you have that video, it will help your health practitioner in the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to, there's other blood tests we can do to see whether it's coming from those neurocysticercosis illnesses. There's actual blood tests you can check and see.
That long word is the worms.
The worms, yeah.
Thank you.
You can just do a test and see.
Yeah.
And say, oh, this is what's underlying. You can also get those same worms, the echinococcus granulosa, that comes from having dogs around you who are affected.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the child is getting seizures and you are, you know, people are talking about, you know, this child is, you know, possessed or demonic or, you know, somebody spiritual, this or that. When the person just, you have animals around and they've ingested something or something has affected them.
Interesting.
But in any case, when it becomes intractable, that means you've given medication, it's not helping. Still go back to your practitioner and say, my child or my sister or my family member is still having seizures.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything we can do?
Mm-hmm.
And they will then say, okay, this is where I stop. However, I will refer you to a neurologist. A neurologist can be a neurologist who's a specialist, subspecialist in epilepsy, an epileptologist, right? And epileptologist, they may say, okay, we'll do this, we'll try that, we'll try the other. And at some point they may say, we'll send you to a neurosurgeon because you have, you know, a scar in your brain from a former bleed. You bled in, you hit your head, you had a bleed, you have a scar in your brain that needs to be just taken out. And those seizures may stop. So someone can become seizure-free sometimes. You know,
I see.
Depending on the type of seizure.
But you know, what doctor's now saying is what kind of magicians they are. Because only not so long ago, any operation to the brain was a big hole and a big problem and they take out a big piece.
Yeah.
These days they go microscopic.
Yeah.
And they can see much more in the brain because much more can be done to treat the origin of the seizures.
Interesting. Surgery. Hmm. I didn't even know that.
Yes, that's the gospel we bring you today.
Yeah.
For epilepsy.
You're doing awareness right in the studio already.
Yeah. So there's, you know, there's even this deep brain stimulation, which is a subset of neuromodulation that's modulating the brain, where you can put in, you know, electrical probes into the brain that then will help to reorganize electrical activity within the brain. And we're also using this in Parkinson's and other movement disorders, epilepsy being a type of movement disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can help to abort the seizures. It is like a pacemaker for your heart, literally. We have a pacemaker for the brain.
Okay.
Okay. So you get the probes inside the brain, minimal openings as well, mm-hmm. as Mina described.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the pacemaker implanted on the chest, usually. And that helps to just control your brain activity.
Mm.
And so, yeah.
Interesting.
All sorts of therapies.
Okay.
And some are external. Some are extracranial. Some are intracranial. And there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So one shouldn't actually sit at home and think that I'm a lost case. Nobody can help me. I'm coming from the village where they say there's a condition for life. There's no lifestyle management. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Now let's talk about, children and having seizures. Now, of course, sometimes parents, don't even know. I mean, seizures can start any age, right? And especially when maybe my child is five years and suddenly when she just turned five, she's having this sort of, I don't even know at that point. I can't even point that it's an epilepsy or it's a seizure. How do you perhaps, what are some of the signs that show that a child is having a seizure? And I will come back to doctor later to tell us about seizures in babies, which is more difficult to diagnose. But Mina, please get into that first.
Actually, children to diagnose is easy.
Okay.
Because a child doesn't have any of the emotional load of having seizures or anything. Because they openly, it just happens. They don't carry it like grown-ups do.
Yeah.
The diagnoses are made in the same way as for grown-ups. All the same tests, all the same everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of childhood epilepsies. 80% of them disappear in teenage and onwards ages.
Okay.
So most of them go away. That's why we are very careful to have all children with epilepsy educated. Because it can happen that it goes away. And then they 16, 17, 18, or 25, and they're not qualified at all.
Imagine.
So that is a difficult thing. On dealing with a child with epilepsy, it is more that you actually know your child.
Mm.
I mean, when as a baby, you know what is a cry for whatever, a need.
Mm-mm.
You can hear when it's sore. You can hear when it's not right.
Mm.
You can hear when it's scared. And that's kind of how parents recognize the seizures, is that, I mean, you're the primary caregiver.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know this. so the recognition of a seizure. But there's something else. Me and my son had febrile seizures when we were babies because of fever.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be very bad, but hardly ever is. Neither of us have anything of it.
Mm-hmm.
But when a child is sick and you have this proper child seizure,
mm-hmm.
then you know you have to immediately get to treatment.
And get to the hospital. Get it
either the infection or the fever.
Treated,
solved. And I know that there are many nights that I didn't sleep. Mm. When I was worried that my son would have another
episode.
Febrile seizure. Yes.
Okay.
So the recognition of seizures is actually better when it's from a parent to a child than when it's from an adult to an adult.
Oh, I see.
Because you know the child.
So yes, well. Yes. That's so true. And you speak of something very important that I would want us to address. Few years ago, when my daughter was about 5 years old, she was not feeling well and her temperature skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. But then I didn't have a thermometer in the house. I thought it's just one of those things. When we got to the hospital, even the nurse said, this is the first time I'm seeing a temperature of 39. And having known about fever seizures or something like that, I was now blaming myself. Why didn't I get to the hospital earlier, soonest? Now, doctor, speak to us on the importance of really getting the child to hospital for medical treatment, especially when they are having a fever, and also talk to us about, educate us in terms of what causes seizures when the temperature is very high.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go a bit further back. You talked about having a thermometer.
Yeah.
And checking the temperature. And this should be part of every parent's toolkit. Okay.
Okay.
So if you have a thermometer at home, you are able to check if the child is out of sorts. I mean, you should be able to feel, but sometimes depending on weather patterns and what's going on, mm-hmm. it may be difficult it becomes more subjective.
Okay.
But the thermometer is more objective, and especially you need to learn how to use it properly. Some are to be used under the arm, some are to be used, you know, rectally, some are to be used in the ear. So it's important to use it properly.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some that also have a shortcut where you put it on the forehead and it'll read the actual number for you, the figure for you. So that makes it a bit easier.
Okay.
But those are not necessarily as practical to have around. So when you have a baby, the child cannot tell you, I'm not feeling well sometimes, mm-hmm. and you yourself can't gauge the precise temperature. So it is important to have a thermometer around. And feeling a child who is warm or warmer than usual,
mm-hmm.
If the child has not been treated for anything and you're not sure, always have a low threshold for going to your health practitioner to see the child, because children are fragile and they deteriorate very quickly.
Mm.
Surprisingly quickly. So better to be safe rather than be sorry,
mm-hmm.
and out of caution to go and see your health practitioner.
Okay.
Yeah.
Doctor, thank you. Let's pause here now, make room for a scheduled commercial break. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh?
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary.
Easter's cheaper with extra low prices at Furman Brock. Get 2 kg Tastic Rice for $36.99. A 2-liter Coca-Cola for only $21.99. 2 kg Sunlight Hand or Auto Washing Powder for $54.99. And 9 Twin Saver 2-ply Toilet Rolls for only $69.99. Hop on over to furmanbrock.com to see more Easter bargains at WB. We care.
Okay, we're still talking about epilepsy and raising awareness around this. Now, Ms. Mina, talk to us about the organization that is Epilepsy Namibia. I know that it is for the people and about the people, and also you do training and advocacy. Say, I want to know more. I want to be part of this organization so I can help perhaps a family member who has epilepsy. How do you go about it? And also, within that, tell us whether you also go to schools to educate the young ones on it.
Yeah. We fly with wide wings.
Okay.
In many fields of the lives of people with epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
We are not medical.
Okay.
That we must stress. We don't diagnose. We don't give prescriptions. Mm-hmm. Nothing. That's the clever people that have to do this.
Because, I mean, how do you deal with the brain cells
that coming
out
of nah.
And all those terminologies.
Because our point of view is that people live with epilepsy.
Okay.
We don't know how long, and we don't know how it's going to be for them.
Mm.
So we're trying a holistic approach where the medical side is very important, but also living with epilepsy.
Yeah.
The awareness is more about... We very concentrated on the person with epilepsy. We want them to stay in their communities.
Mm-hmm.
We want them to be where they speak their language, where their community is, where their cultural roots are,
mm-hmm.
and to help them to be, to have access to medical services,
mm-hmm.
to go to school, to get educated, mm-hmm. to get a job, to have a social life, and also, the little things you have to do when you live with epilepsy.
Okay.
The doctor has already said about the different things you can do. We have many guides like that.
Okay.
But also things like how to cope in your society or to socialize to your society.
Mm-hmm.
To tell the schools that a child doesn't have to go home after a seizure, it can stay. We do the schools training. We do the training for the teachers, and we do for the classroom as well, because we have to prepare the class for when a seizure happens, because
mm-hmm.
it is disruptive. I mean, it's very,
yes.
it's very dramatic,
okay.
and it can have an influence on everybody. So it's good to inform the learners before that they have a person with epilepsy in their
mm-hmm.
class.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it's going to look like when they have a seizure. Normally we ask that there is one student who when the seizure comes, assists, and one who takes note.
Oh.
For everybody, when the lesson is stopped, that they say we came up to page 4 or whatever, to handle the seizure, which should not take more than 4 or 5 minutes, the whole procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And then this note taker can inform the class and the teacher where they were. And he will also take some notes afterwards, because it's not to say that the learner with epilepsy is going to be immediately attentive again.
Okay.
It might take a while.
Okay.
You don't know.
Yeah.
That kind of thing is what we do. And with employers, if they have a person who gets epilepsy while they're working there, is to try and adapt their work procedure that they don't have to climb or work with dangerous stuff or that kind of thing. So we analyze the individual situation and then try and adapt it to where they get the best outcome.
Okay. Imagine, I hear you now, and I didn't think about it ever like that. Say, for instance, this person has epilepsy, and then they are perhaps a builder, and then they are now climbing up and they have a fist while they're up there, which is not safe for them. There's really a need to educate us and to create awareness. Doctor, when we're talking about epilepsy, what are some of those things that you know it needs to be educated on, it needs to be put out there for the public, you know, as awareness? I now realize that we're not doing enough in this regard, right? We're not doing enough to shining awareness in terms of epilepsy. But what are some of those truthful, factual knowledge on epilepsy that we need to know?
One of the most important ones is to understand that epilepsy is a disease.
Okay.
It's a pathology.
Okay.
Just like you have malaria or you have you know, something like that. It's not something that's non-organic. It's a real thing. It's an entity. It is to, with that understanding, it's important that everybody gets that, first of all, number one, that our entire community in every language. And to that point, I would like to say, all of us, as Namibians, as Africans, what is the word for epilepsy or seizures in our own language? That's important, number one. I see you looking. It looks like you
know, I don't even know. I've never.
So it oh my exists. Word. What is the word? Like last year, we tried to find the word for brain. Some people didn't even know the word for brain. This year, what is your word for epilepsy? Number one. Number two, what is the meaning of that word in your language? And is that meaning?
Oh, actually, accurate? We do have.
Well, in the sequence.
Yeah. Oshinona. Asa Oshinona. Yes.
Yes. So in my own language, my own home language, there is a word for seizures, and it is a word which is actually derogatory and misleading.
Yeah.
Without going into all the details.
Yeah.
So it's important to make those distinctions, first of all, in the definition of what something is. Okay. That the population understands it's organic. Okay. Second of all, that once a person has been found to have this, that everybody, it is communicated, and they are protected and they are defended.
Yeah.
So that they understand that they are included and the community is with them. Okay. All those issues of workplace, adaptations, classroom preparation for emergencies.
Yeah.
That is being part of a community and your community including you.
Okay.
Right? And so it is important that we do that for everybody that we know who has this condition.
Mm.
And then thirdly, again, as a healthcare practitioner, I have to always keep giving this public, public education. Take the person for treatment, diagnosis and treatment when you're not sure or if you don't know.
Mm.
Okay. You asked earlier about epilepsy, babies and people who in whom you cannot tell whether they have epilepsy.
Yes, yes, thank you.
There are centers with neurologists or that are just neurophysiology centers where people can be studied. You know, a cap is put on and they can have sleep studies, even when the person's sleeping, or 24 hours a day or 48 hours a day, 48 hours rather, altogether, not in a day, 24 hours of the day or for 48 hours or even longer to study this person and see what electric activity is going on in their brain and the brain waves. And there are seizures which are subclinical. We can't see them happening, but they're happening in the person's head. And these machines can pick them up. So if you see something abnormal, just always do something.
Okay.
Get information, find out. You take your baby to your pediatrician and say, something's going on, I'm not sure. All of a sudden, the baby starts smacking its lips. It's looking around. It's not looking me in the eye. Something's going on, I'm not sure. And they will say, that sounds like X. That sounds like Y. Let's send the baby for further assessment here or there. Don't just sit at home and cry. Don't listen to somebody saying, that child is possessed or something. No. Anytime you hear something like that, find out more. Take your child, take your friend, take your relative, your colleague. Let's look into this further before we give up, before, you know, we end up miscommunicating, relegating somebody to the back burner.
Yeah. Doctor, before I get to Ms. Amina, we're coming to you definitely. talk to, I want to say my Christian counterpart, that you cannot pray epilepsy away. You know, there has been some misconceptions also that, no, don't take them to the hospital, just pray the demon out of them. Please talk to us about that.
So that is a sociocultural issue.
Okay.
So I would not say do this or don't do this.
Yeah.
As a medical practitioner, I've told you what the facts are.
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
It is now for the society to decide. You may know somebody has something, and people still want to pray about it.
Which is fine.
The community, you want to come together. It's a type of inclusion. You want to include somebody in something and make them feel loved. Okay. I have no argument with that. That's your sociocultural activity. Still take the person.
Thank
you. For the medical aspect.
Okay.
Yes. We have had cases where we've had people with brain tumors. And, tumor is removed and they go and get prayers. Okay. We cannot say that. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Thinking positively and getting community support
is important in all conditions.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay. It's important in reducing your stress.
Yes.
And I won't even say it's just particularly unique to the Christian community or any particular community. It is important that people are supported and that there's positive vibes going all around. But in addition to all of that, for any belief community, follow your medical path, get your medical needs met. And you can, in addition to positive vibes and social support,
don't
that
neglect.
Is a beautiful thing.
Thank you.
Together.
I love how you put it. I just love it how you put it. Ms. Amina, back to you.
That is part of the holistic approach. Because things like prayer, meditation, reflection, quiet times, because with the seizures, the brain pulses go up and down above the levels that are normal where the seizures are.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that calms the brain and has an emotional support, whatever form, doesn't matter.
Okay.
It is part of the approach to living with a condition like this.
Yeah.
And the community support is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
The prayer, the meditation, the relaxing exercises, the taking a break, everything that we've mentioned already is that it forms part of a personality. Okay. I mean, if you get scared, what do you do?
Okay.
That anything that calms you down has a positive effect on the epilepsy itself.
Wonderful. But in all that, don't neglect the medical aspect.
No, no. Everything goes together.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Anyway, it has been a beautiful conversation because I've learned a lot and I believe that my listeners have learned a lot. Ms. Amina, your last words to the people?
Please talk about it.
Okay. Thank you. Doctor?
Please make sure you see your healthcare practitioner if you have any questions about anything in your health, most especially anything to do with the brain and anything to do with epilepsy in particular.
Okay. And with that, listeners, we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We educated you on brain awareness. So it's up to you now to run with this right information. But should you be interested in more, please don't hesitate to reach out and ask for the right information. With that now, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We're back with news beyond the borders on Namibia right here on Eagle FM on the radar and news analysis.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
And we are back now for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off in South Africa with Bota Singwaku building fire affected EC government departments. Let's take a listen to that.
I want to take you to more news on the go in the Eastern Cape. The Public Works MEC in Spogazi Mani Lusiti is currently giving an update on measures that are currently being put in place to continue with service delivery. We're also expecting her to touch on the damage caused to the iconic Botha Sigcawu building, which went up in flames last week. Let's listen in.
And the Dalindyebo Depot and the Mthatha Depot. Also using the Department of Transport offices at the Mthatha Airport. Well, government continues to explore additional accommodation solutions, prioritizing the optimal use of existing state-owned properties in order to ensure a cost-effective and efficiency in the provisioning of temporary office space. This approach is consistent with our commitment to prudent management of public resources. We are also considering requesting a specialized support from outside the province to conduct an emergency evacuation of some of the critical national assets in the area that have not been fully affected by the fire, and those include the deeds archives and the historical archives. We are assembling a team that will undertake a full assessment of damage and develop a costed scope of the rebuilding of the facility. The team will also package a project in preparation for sourcing of alternative funding models. We wish to assure the people of the Eastern Cape that government remains fully committed to ensuring uninterrupted service delivery despite this unfortunate incident. All affected departments continue to operate, and measures have been put in place to ensure that citizens continue to receive the services they require. The provincial government will continue to provide updates as further progress is made regarding both the temporary accommodation arrangements and the longer-term rehabilitation of the facility. We wish to call on all affected communities to exercise patience as government is making all efforts to navigate the space and as the incident has caused severe disruptions on service delivery. That being said, we want to thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, MEC. If colleagues are covered, it will be very good. But if not, maybe allow you the space for questions. Please introduce yourself and the media house you're coming from. Mr. Dandis, Liema, let's start with you. Is that the only colleagues who wish to take questions? Okay.
Good morning to everyone in the room. Thanks a lot for the time, MEC. As things stand, are your investigators telling us that will the building be rebuilt for now, or it's just a foregone conclusion that it won't operate again? And the cost with regards to that building, if it were to be rebuilt from scratch, have you reached where the money will come from, or an estimate of how much it will cost? I think I'm safe for that.
Good morning, everyone. Liema here from Newsroom Africa. MEC, just clarity on two points. You mentioned the accommodation for various departments. To my understanding, please correct me if I'm wrong, this is something in the works. or it is already being implemented. Take, for instance, transit. That institution on its own already has employees and serves its purpose within the Department of Education. So what implications will be there if it's still a plan in the pipeline to accommodate the over 340 employees of the Department of Education in that institution transit? And with the other accommodation areas as well, are there any implications? I know you mentioned about renovations that may need to be done so as to ensure that those employees can be accommodated there. So any implications to that regard? And then with regards to the remote working of some of the employees, how is that fed so far? Because we are receiving reports from some of those employees that have concerns about the inadequate resources that are provided to them to be able to continue to work remotely. I know you also mentioned that you also had a consult, an engagement, I beg your pardon, with labor unions. So how is that process fed so far in terms of those that are working remotely? And can we, I think just also add lastly to my colleague Bongile's point, do we know for sure as yet what actually led to that fire? And is it something that can be salvageable, or it might completely need to be destroyed? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Liam. And I think that, okay.
Good morning, Azala Bande from the Voice Lounge. I think I want to follow up on the records that were burnt in the building. I think major concerns are for pensioners. You know, some of them seem to be affected. I've been getting the pensions, of course, and records, which are hard copies, which have been digitized. Can you give an update on that and what is happening there? And also, I think we found out that, well, we heard that there's going to be an investigation, the Hawks and Sars investigating the fire. Is there maybe any evidence that is leading to that kind of investigation, suspicion of arson or anything like that? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that.
Meanwhile, still in South Africa, traffic volumes are set to increase because of the Easter weekend.
We move now to traffic volumes. They are set to begin picking up on major roads right across South Africa. And this is ahead of the start of the long Easter weekend. Transport Minister Barbara Creasy will be overseeing compliance efforts at the N1 Kranskop Toll Plaza in Limpopo. It's part of her department's efforts to promote safer road usage during one of the busiest travel periods on South Africa's roads. Our Julia Joseph live for us from the Carousel Toll Plaza just outside Pretoria. Are vast volumes of people on the move this morning? Juliet, good morning.
Good morning, Iman, and good morning to our viewers. Well, yes, we are here at the N1 Carousel Toll Plaza, which is also one of the toll plazas that connects, the traffic that leaves Gauteng heading into Limpopo. And we're expecting those traffic volumes to peak. But for now, however, if I just move out of shot, we are seeing, steady flowing traffic, not so many vehicles here as yet. So it is a steady flow of traffic. However, officials are saying they are anticipating the volumes to increase, especially around the afternoon, going into the evening as holidaymakers, travel toward to their destinations. And most importantly, as, faith groups also make their way through this toll. Usually we do see traffic heading towards Limpopo, and that would be mostly the pilgrims heading towards, to the Moria. So they are anticipating to see traffic pick up. But this plaza, Iman, is the one that comes right after Pumlani Toll Plaza, and we made our way past it. It was a bit busy there as well. However, this route is where the Department of Transport has decided to, launch campaign along this highway because, of course, a number of accidents have been, recorded, especially around the Easter period. And you would know, Iman, a number of people, 189 deaths were recorded last year around the same period, Easter. All those people, 189 dying on the country's roads. So officials making sure that they deal with, vigilance as well as compliance and ensuring that motorists do have their licenses, their permits, and also that they are wearing seat belts just to deal with lawlessness. There's a few of them stationed here, just actually two or so, but where we're heading to, which would be the stop that we'll be focusing on this morning, it's the Transcorp one, and there, of course, we are expecting to see more law enforcement there. We also, you know, seeing some presence on the ground there by Pumlani Toll Plaza, just a few of them that were stopping vehicles, especially buses transporting people, and making sure that they're not speeding or reckless driving and also other traffic violations. It also remains to be seen if the number will, of course, be as the one that was around the Easter period. You'd understand, of course, that the fuel prices went up, with petrol being over 3 rand per litre, diesel of around 7 rand per litre. So we do not know if many people or motorists are still going to be travelling and taking advantage of, you know, going to see their families, going to see their churches. And however, I do have, you know, RTMC spokesperson Simon Zwane here with me just quickly now. Simon, please let us know, how are the traffic volumes looking? I know 1,500 vehicles have made their way through this plaza. Tell us about the other.
Yeah, no, all the routes are getting busy this morning. On the entry, there's already more than 1,000 vehicles getting out of Gauteng towards KwaZulu-Natal. So the N4 is also busy, and this route is expected to get extremely busy in the afternoon. We expect all of them, actually, when people get off work. We know many people are working a half day, and they will be making their way out of the cities at around 12. So we expect traffic to really peak in the early hours of the afternoon.
And what traffic offences are you going to be focusing on exactly?
We know it's a payday weekend, so people will be drinking alcohol. We will focus on alcohol. We will focus on speeding, but we'll also focus on the roadworthiness of vehicles and whether the drivers have got the proper documents to be operating the vehicles on the public roads.
And now, Simon, you're going to be joining the Transport Minister, Barbara Creasy, at the next Hope Plaza, Transcorp Plaza. Tell us, what will be done differently in terms of initiations to ensure that we're reducing road carnage? Because it's usually the same, you know, officers are out there at different tolls. What is the, you know, your department planning on doing differently this year?
Yeah, we know that there are really like two factors that increase the number of people who die on South African roads. First is it's public transport vehicles, so buses and taxis that are either not roadworthy and driven by people who don't even have the proper documentation. We are going to focus quite closely on that. But the second issue is on pedestrian safety. We know that over the Easter period last year, 40% of people who died on the roads were pedestrians. So we want to reduce that number. We know if we can reduce the number of pedestrians dying on the roads, we will be able to sustain the decrease in fatalities that we are starting to see throughout the country.
Meanwhile, Nigerian fuel prices surge 65% amid global oil shock.
Nigeria's oil production regime is complex. Critics argue Africa's largest oil producer is in fact a sleeping giant, despite decades-long massive investments in the production value chain. And with the country's complicated matrix and attempts to stabilize the naira and meet the debt obligations, instead of building buffers, Africa's largest economy is seeing external reserves shrinking. The Central Bank of Nigeria data reveals that reserves fell by nearly a percentage point, about $49.57 billion as of March 24th this year, marking the seventh consecutive decline. For many Nigerians, it was supposed to be a simple arithmetic. Higher oil prices should equal stronger foreign reserves. But instead, while the Middle East are above Nigeria's 2026 budget benchmark of around $65, there is no reprieve.
Our oil operations, upstream oil export, is a JV, it's a joint venture. So it's not everything that we'll export that belongs to us. It's almost 50-50. You know? So again, we need to manage our expectations with respect to that. Thirdly, is the fact that even the portion that belongs to Nigeria, part of it has been sold upfront.
Even more critical is how much Nigeria is actually producing. The country is currently producing roughly around 1.5 million barrels per day, below its production capacity and below its OPEC quota. So while prices are up, output is not.
One of the significant challenges that we have is insecurity and then oil theft. So I think that not just the amount, the price, but we're also looking at volume. We're still not meeting our volume. Assuming it's a situation where the increase comes, the increased price comes, and then we have even excess volume to meet that price, then we'd have significant opportunity to fill in our reserves. But that's not the case at this time.
The federal government had invested upwards of $3 billion to set up and try to operationalize at least 4 state-owned refineries that remain moribund decades later. What's more, Nigeria has been spending heavily in combating oil theft. While there's been some progress, oil theft still remains a big problem, impacting the country's crude oil production volume. Low production volumes therefore mean low oil receipts, and with oil accounting for over 80% of the country's foreign exchange earnings, the reserve is coming under pressure.
The government is still supporting the dollar, actually. So it's currently trending around 1,300, thereabout. But the government's hand is still there. It's not like it's the forces of demand and supply that has brought it to 1,300 plus. So it's a drain on the reserves.
While the decline is still minimal at this point, analysts say if reserves continue to fall, the immediate risk is exchange rate pressure. And in Nigeria's import-dependent economy, a weaker naira quickly translates into higher food prices, more expensive fuel, and rising cost of living.
The inflation numbers are highly sensitive to exchange rate movements because our level of import dependence is high. So if we begin to experience serious pressure on our reserves, if that leads to some speculative pressure of demand for foreign exchange, then we may begin to see that our currency will come under pressure. In terms of maximizing our revenue, we need to improve our output. We have been struggling to improve output for some time, but we are not yet there. If we're able to improve our output significantly, and if this crisis persists, then of course we'll be able to earn a lot more.
For an oil-dependent economy, moments like this are meant to provide relief. But for Nigeria, rising crude prices are not translating into stronger reserves, exposing long-standing vulnerabilities in production, fiscal management, and foreign exchange stability. And unless those gaps are addressed, the next oil boom may once again come and go without delivering the expected gains. Deji Bademasi, CGTN, Lagos, Nigeria.
Meanwhile, Africa's economy outlook remains positive despite challenges, so it is said.
Africa's medium-term economic outlook is still, relatively speaking, positive. That at least is the argument being made by the African Development Bank in its January 2026 macroeconomic outlook report. The bank is forecasting that real GDP growth will stabilize at 4.3% this year and then rise to 4.5% in 2027. According to that report, the growth will be supported by growing private consumption, easing monetary conditions, and improved external balances. Despite that positive outlook, though, the report warns that persistent debt distress and infrastructure gaps do remain as critical obstacles to long-term economic prosperity across the continent. Let's explore the headline numbers and arguments in that macroeconomic outlook from the African Development Bank. Ken Gishinga of Mentoria Economics is joining us on the program. Ken, good to see you. So there was some interesting progress, right, that has been made in lowering inflation on average. The average number was 13.6% last year. Compare that to the figure of almost 22% in 2024. But the crisis we're seeing now in the Gulf is likely to erase most of those gains, isn't it?
You're absolutely correct, Rama. There is a similarity in terms of the inflation outlook that might start rising given the Gulf crisis. However, there is one critical distinction between the COVID experience and what we are about to witness now. During the COVID pandemic, what we had at that time was demand-driven inflation because of pent-up demand in the market at that time due to lockdown. That was demand-driven inflation, which was easy to control using monetary policy tools. What you're about to experience now with the Gulf crisis would be more of cost-push inflation, which isn't easily cured using monetary policy tools. So I think that's one important distinction.
The African Development Bank also makes an interesting argument. They're saying that countries that are facing liquidity pressures should engage in proactive restructuring of their debts, including domestic debt, where necessary. What do you make of that argument?
Well, it's true that the debt distress is shaking the foundations of African economies, not least right here in Kenya, where we saw the control of budget saying in the next 1 year, there'll be about $3 trillion coming due in terms of debt. Now, what is being put as a solution is to push out those maturities using instruments such as bond switches to be able to ease the pressures. That heavy reliance on domestic debt can easily crowd out the private sector, and already we've seen it. In fact, 2 weeks ago, we saw the largest auction bid on the 364 T-bill, which shows that there's a significant crowding out of the private sector. So that's one side effect that could have huge implications on unemployment and standards of living.
Indeed. It's not often that we actually hear that a multilateral institution telling member countries, look, you know, if there's a window here for proactive debt management and restructuring, you should take it. This is new language, isn't it?
It shows to the changing times. You know, last year we were telling our clients that we are really on the cusp of a new global economic order, and this is the new language that we'll be seeing from multilateral institutions, because for them, debt sustainability is still a very, very big thing in terms of their objective. So yes, it is time for innovative tools. We've seen the Central Bank of Kenya here launching bond switches to be able to push out those maturities, and expect to see a bit more liquidity management innovation.
One last thing for you. The update from AFDB, in my opinion, they sort of bury the lead on this one, because they're pointing out that in the 1960s, and I'm quoting the report here, African workers were 40% to 45% more productive than workers in Indonesia, Korea, Malaysia, Singapore, and Thailand. But by 2010, that had flipped dramatically. Workers in those five Asian states were more than three times productive vis-a-vis the equivalent here in Africa. How do we solve that massive and persistent productivity problem?
Productivity is often linked to innovation, and innovation is predominantly a creation of the private sector. From my travels of many African countries, we still see a huge dependence on the public sector or commodity cycles. So public sector investments in infrastructure, which is good, but we find that the private sectors are often crowded out due to high interest rates. So until we get to a situation where we crowd in private actors that tend to be a bit more nimble, a bit more innovative, then that Schumpeterian tradition of innovation will start being seen, and we'll see a lot more productivity coming through.
Meanwhile, some international news. U.S. President Donald Trump says Iran war objectives nearing complexion.
President Trump has said the U.S. core strategic objectives in the war in Iran are nearing completion. In a televised address about the conflict, Mr. Trump said that the U.S. was going to finish the job fast. He repeated threats to target Iran's energy infrastructure unless a deal was agreed by the new leaders of the regime. Addressing rising oil prices, Mr. Trump insisted that they would soon be falling, and he stressed that the war he had started would be much shorter than other recent conflicts the U.S. had joined. Here's our North America correspondent, David Willis.
In his first primetime address since the war with Iran began, President Trump hailed what he called America's overwhelming victories and said the conflict was nearing completion.
I can say tonight that we are on track to complete all of America's military objectives shortly, very shortly. We're going to hit them extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Ages where they belong. In the meantime, discussions are ongoing.
Whilst intimating it is open to negotiation, Iran has insisted that no direct talks have been taking place, contrary to President Trump's assertion that the regime is desperately seeking a ceasefire. And as Iranian missiles continued to pound Israel and U.S. allies in the region, there was no word of the potential deployment of U.S. ground troops. President Trump appears to have abandoned his demand for Iran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Iran is effectively blocking this vital waterway, driving up global energy prices in the process. But Mr. Trump no longer believes that's America's problem.
We don't need it. We haven't needed it, and we don't need it. We've beaten and completely decimated Iran. They are decimated, both militarily and economically and in every other way. And the countries of the world that do receive oil through the Hormuz Strait must take care of that passage. They must cherish it. They must grab it and cherish it. They can do it easily. We will be helpful, but they should take the lead in protecting the oil that they so desperately depend on.
President Trump said the Strait of Hormuz would open up automatically once the war has ended. America's allies will be relieved to hear he made no repeat of his threat to pull out of NATO in response to Europe's lack of support for the war. But there was also no word of where the conflict might go from here. The White House clearly wants this conflict to end, but how and on whose terms, the world is none the wiser. David Willis, BBC News.
Our correspondent Lorna Gordon is in Dubai. Lorna, how have the Gulf states reacted to this televised address by Mr. Trump?
You know, the Gulf states are actually being courted with words by both sides at the moment. Donald Trump spoke of not failing the Gulf states, not letting them get hurt in any way, shape or form. While it's reported that a spokesperson for the Iranian Ministry of Foreign Affairs has said that Iran does not consider its neighbours in the Gulf Iran's enemy. There are, of course, though, continuing missile strikes on these countries. Overnight, the alarm sounded here in Dubai. Saudi Arabia said it intercepted a ballistic missile that was heading to the east of the country. Sirens sounded overnight in Bahrain as well. So there are these words, there are the actions, and then, of course, there is the Strait of Hormuz, that pinch point, that choke point where around a fifth of the world's oil has to pass, and where normally around 140 ships transit through every single day, but at the moment only a handful are getting through. There is that meeting that will take place a little later, a virtual meeting. The Gulf states will be taking part in that to discuss diplomatic measures to potentially open that waterway. But of course, the Gulf states do not speak with one voice, and the UAE is seeking a resolution from the UN, calling on the UN Security Council to take immediate action under Chapter 7 of the UN Charter to ensure safe navigation in and around the Strait of Hormuz. And of course, remember that would, if it passed, which is, you know, there's a lot of steps before that point would be reached, but would give legal cover for a range of options economically, diplomatically, and using force as well.
How much closer does all this bring to retaliatory strikes of some sort from Gulf states that haven't so far taken such action?
Now, with that, we have come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkona Nadengi program, brought to you by Louise Shimi. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye, and have yourself a wonderful Thursday afternoon, and drive safely this Easter weekend.